This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now, did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. This episode is sponsored by ByHeart. Hold on, y'all. With all this talk about making babies that we love to do, let's talk for a second about feeding those little miracles when they come. ByHeart is an infant nutrition company that started with a simple mission: make the best formula in the world. When chest feeding isn't an option, ByHeart's clinically proven, easy-to-digest infant formula is there for you. Their patented protein blend gets closest to breast milk. Plus, ByHeart is made with certified clean ingredients and no soy, corn syrup, GMOs, or palm oil. And it's the only U.S.-made infant formula with globally sourced ingredients to use organic, grass-fed whole milk, not skim. ByHeart also happens to be clinically proven for easier digestion, less spit up, and softer poops versus a leading infant formula, which, trust me, you're gonna want. So tell me, you curious about ByHeart? Redeem your welcome offer at byheart.com/podcast with code QueerFam for a limited time. Additional terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp, Generate Life Sciences, and Modern Fertility. And we are so excited to have them on board, making our show a possibility.
Welcome to If These Ovaries Could Talk. I'm Jamie.
I'm Robin.
And we're your hosts.
Let me show you.
Love is love. If you don't have to make a family by taking a traditional ride. If these ovaries could talk, you would say.
How do I get the sperm through custom?
I am a lesbian.
So gay.
We need to tell our story.
It's not your nuclear family anymore. It's not just your mom and dad thing.
We're not ruining these little humans.
Not for the gay reason. Just
because
we stay.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
Welcome back to our ovaries.
Oh,
we're
God.
Happy to be here in our separate pandemic apartments. Our ovaries runneth over.
Our ovaries. Here we are, Jamie.
Ovaries. Here we are, you know, talking LGBTQ families. And speaking of LGBTQ families, you like what I did there, mm-hmm. Robin? You like what I did?
Nice transition, Jamie.
We got an email from a listener recently.
Hannah.
Regarding one of our most recent episodes, the episode Freya. She's queer spawn. She has two gay moms.
And then she's also second generation.
Yeah. And she just had a baby with a sperm donor. And this email is just so wonderful and totally the reason why we created this podcast. And so we just thought it would be great to read you her email.
So, all right, here's Hannah. I just listened to your podcast for the first time. It was the episode with Freya, the new mom. First of all, your podcast is great. Oh, thanks, Hannah.
Thank you.
I'll definitely be listening to more. But second, that was the most affirming podcast experience I've ever had. I'm also a second generation queer spawn, actually fourth generation, but that's not the point, which that's interesting, right?
That's so cool.
Reach out to us. Although she did say she was shy, but she had ridiculously similar experiences to what Freya described, except my dad really is a street performer. How amazing is that, Jamie?
That's amazing.
It's so rare that I hear adult children of LGBTQ parents interviewed, and even rarer that I hear second generation people interviewed, especially when their parents aren't still together to demonstrate some ideal nuclear except for the same sex part family. So I guess I just wanted to thank you and Freya, too. I mean, how great is Freya? That's me talking.
She's the best and coolest.
Thanks for making a show that I identified with like that. For the first, maybe second time in my life, I got to be like, yeah, that stranger's life makes sense to me.
Oh my God.
I love that. That's the whole point of this.
Right?
That's the whole point.
Right?
So that people can see themselves mirrored in these stories. So thank you so much, Hannah, for writing in. One of my favorite emails I have personally read in the past month.
And we're not supposed to have favorites, but Freya's episode was one of my faves.
Love Freya.
Well, I mean,
she's just cool.
She just was so awesome. But like, what's so interesting about that email is like, Freya's situation is oddly specific, right? Oddly specific. Right. Yet here's Hannah out there with a very similar experience. Like, I love mm-hmm. that.
And she has never, ever, ever heard a story like her. So that's the beauty, guys. So keep writing in, keep coming and telling us your stories, because you never know, it might help someone else out there.
It's true. It's really true. And while it you're really out is. There, why don't you pick up a copy of our blockbuster New York Times bestseller book?
Not that.
It's not that, Jamie. Did you like my transition? And then I went right into a bold-faced lie about our book being a blockbuster New York Times bestseller.
I mean, the lies need to stop.
I don't think they do.
We learned nothing in this country.
There's two things that don't need to stop. Shorts all day long and our blockbuster New York Times bestseller, If These Ovaries Could Talk, the things that we've learned about making LGBTQ family.
I think that little lie, the blockbuster NYTE bestseller, I think that one is like the Field of Dreams. Like, if you dream it, it will happen.
If you build it, it will come.
Yes, that's the actual phrase. If you build it, it will come. It is a New York Times bestseller.
A blockbuster New York Times bestseller.
Maybe in 100 years.
and also 100 years from now, we all rate and review our book on Amazon, Google, and Goodreads. Okay, then,
that's
Jamie.
That's still going to be around. So yeah, go buy it, rate and review it. Listen to our audiobook so you can hear us read it to you. Who wouldn't want that?
Wouldn't want more of us, Jamie?
You know, we should have recorded more of our bloopers while we were
reading
it.
We should have had Mary and Anne record it and then have them talk about all the things that they felt like get their voices in and be like, that's how Robin feels. Let me tell you how I feel. That would have been funny. Oh my God. All right. Join our Patreon community to help us make this show. And for bonus content, you're going to get video interviews of most of the episodes, and they drop a day early, and it's the full video interview. There's no ads. So you get that at the gestational carrier level. And you just need to head over to patreon.com/ovariestalk.
PATREON.com.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about. Yes, Helen, we're getting to the guest.
Okay, Helen, so stop.
21.
Helen.
Maybe Helen could stop being a
so
dork.
Mean.
So mean, Helen.
Dork.
I don't know. I was going to say a more harsh word, but I realized my son's outside the door.
Yeah, also, I'm just glad you're not going to say really harsh words about Helen, because
we do
deep
love
down,
Helen.
We love Helen.
We do.
We love Helen.
I have a special
with all our might. We would have fired her by now.
Anyway. Did fire her, Jamie. She doesn't leave. Okay, go ahead. Introduce our guest.
Okay, Nathan. Ugh. He's, oh my God.
Nathan and his big beard.
Oh yeah, he's the cutest. Just the cutest guy. And he started fostering at the ripe old age of 21.
21.
Guys. Oh my God.
Don't ever tell me you can't be up to stuff in your life as a young person when Nathan was out there being a dad at 21.
Because guess what? He has 5 grandkids now. He's still younger than us. So.
Yes, Helen, play the tape. Hi, Nathan.
Hello.
It's so nice to have you, Nathan.
It's fabulous to be here with you two folks.
Our Patreon folks can see you, but for the rest of the world, like, you're so handsome in your hat and your little giant beard. I love it.
Little giant beard.
Because it's like little but giant.
It's my COVID beard, you know. It reminds me it's COVID time. I get to enjoy and not have to shave every morning.
So wait, are you telling me that non-COVID Nathan doesn't have a beard?
I have a very short beard. And I just decided, you know what, with COVID, it's been like 7 months. I'm like, let's throw caution to the wind and grow it.
So before we say anything else, I think we got to do our 30-second elevator pitch of who is Nathan.
On your mark, get set, go.
Hi, I'm Nathan Lachine. I'm a therapeutic foster parent out here in Washington State. For the last 16 years, I've had the privilege of parenting some of the most at-risk youth in the state. So primarily my husband and I, we work with the older kiddos. So we are usually working with about 12 to 18, and we even do the extended foster care. So we get to keep some of our kiddos till 21. We get to help them get into college and trade schools. And the best part is at 37, I have 5 grandbabies. How was that for an elevator pitch?
Damn.
Holy moly.
You nailed the time and
oh my
and
God.
you managed to get like kids, grandkids, time frame. You nailed it.
How many grandkids you say?
I have 5 grandbabies right now.
Wow. I thought I was special because one of my best friends has 1.
It's not even her, Nathan. Just one of her best friends.
Well, Jamie, if you want to come out here to Washington State, I can get you hooked up as a foster parent. We can get you some grandbabies in a couple of years, too.
Oh my goodness. I think I have my hands full. But what you are doing is such a noble cause. And we want to hear all about your journey, everything.
Yeah. How did you get interested in foster care? I mean, it's your life's work as a parent, but it's also your life's work as in your job. So like, how did those two things start?
Well, my family has always done foster care. So when I'd go back to, you know, my aunts and uncles, they had adopted a couple of kids out of foster care. So growing up, it was always like, all right, more cousins to play with, more cousins to get in trouble with, and, you know, more people to go, you know, build tree forts and fall out of trees with. So it was always kind of just a normal part of my life growing up. My parents did foster care for a couple of years as well. So I was always kind of around it. And I always knew eventually I'd be a foster parent. And when I was working, I was doing store setups within a retail establishment. And this kiddo was hanging around at, you know, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night on a school night. And, you know, after the second or third night, I'm a pretty direct person. I was like, come on, what are you doing, man? You're 12. It's late. It's dark. And that's where this kiddo told me, you know, they're in foster care. They don't have a good foster home. So I, you know, asked, hey, I need to talk to your social worker, and talked with the social worker. And then it came out. The unfortunate thing was a stereotypical kind of terrible foster home ended up where the kid came home one day from school. All of his stuff is in trash bags on the front porch, and his social worker is there to pick him up. And he had no idea. And I get a call. The social worker let the kid call me on the ferry boat ride to his group home. And he's just crying and saying goodbye. I was the only one he got to say goodbye to. And I kind of thought, okay, that's probably just that. A couple of weeks later, I got a phone call from his social worker, and amazing woman, will never forget her name, Robbie Childs. She was one of those that goes, hey, he's missing you. Would you be willing to talk with him? I'm like, oh, of course. A couple of months of talking, she's like, called me up. So his birthday's coming up. He wants you to come up for his birthday. Would you be willing to do a background and fingerprinting?
I'm like, oh, Robbie saw you coming. Oh, she was like, she knew what she was doing. Oh, yeah.
She got me.
Good for
yeah,
her.
She was amazing. And, you know, so we just kind of followed that progression. And then after a couple of visits, she goes, so you ever thought of being a foster parent? Let me get you the paperwork. Let me tell you about it. And even when she retired a couple of years after I had gotten placement on my first kid, she still stayed in our lives. And she's just one of those amazing, you know, social workers that you hear about that, you know, her whole heart and soul was in these kiddos. And, you know, I appreciate everything she did for me and my first kiddos. And, you know, I feel like I'm just kind of paying it forward and getting to help the next generation. And, you know, I've been doing this now. I was a single parent for the first 13 years. Then my husband got married and became an instant dad, an instant grandpa. And we've been doing it now together for about 2.5 years. So almost 16 plus years.
And you're young.
Yeah.
You're very young.
I started when I was 21. So I actually, in the state of Washington, you have to be 21 to become a foster parent. I started the training before I was 21, had to get special permission to take the classes. My birthday fell on July 14th. By like July 20 something, I had my first kiddo.
And that was the kid from the retail store?
Wow.
How long did he stay with you, that kid?
He was with me for about, 5+ years. So he was one of the kids that we were fortunate to get into the extended foster care program. So they can stay with us up until theoretically age 21. He stayed with me till about 19 and then decided that he was really kind of ready for his own, you know, reality and universe, and jumped out of the nest full, you know, both feet in front of him and just kept running. So he's been doing really good, has a stable job, actually has a girlfriend, has his own kiddos. He doesn't have any system involvement, which is the biggest thing I didn't realize till I became a foster parent, is how many of these bio parents had their own experiences in foster care, how their grandparents had these experiences in foster care. And it's a generational thing. So I'm just super excited with most of my kids. They've broken that cycle. I kind of explain it as that it's like a toolbox. You know, if you only have a hammer, can you get a screw in? Yes, you can. It's going to be messy. It's not going to be as effective. And that's what I think a lot of families run into, is that they're not given the parenting resources, the economic resources, the educational resources to really level themselves up and move forward in life. In all my years and all the kids I've seen, I've never met a parent that woke up one day and just said, hey, I'm going to be a bad parent today to my kids. I think they're not empowered.
Mm. Which is just heartbreaking. And thank God your kids are doing so well.
Okay, Jamie, this past crazy political week has got me thinking that it might be time to get back to BetterHelp.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. I need online BetterHelp therapy pronto, like
you
now.
You too, Jamie. I didn't want to say it.
These are some crazy times, yo.
Well, what's so great in all seriousness about BetterHelp is that all you have to do is sign up for BetterHelp and you could be talking to your own licensed professional therapist. That's the most important thing, in under 48 hours.
Yeah, and if you don't gel with who they match you with, you can change therapists, no problem, and it's free to do so because BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches. They're great.
Yeah, and you can message your counselor at any time and you'll get timely responses, which I love. Mm-hmm. And it's less expensive, so important right now, than traditional in-person counseling. Plus, they have a broad range of expertise that might not be available in your local area. Oh, and Jamie, they offer financial aid.
Yeah. Affordable therapy from the comfort of your own home. What beats that?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing, Jamie. Mm-hmm. And their website is full of positive reviews. Here's one. Jan is a true professional with compassion and empathy to spare. She's reduced my anxiety with counseling and has encouraged my openness and growth. Thank you. You oh my God, it. I love Jan.
Me too. I want Jan. Maybe I'll switch. Listen, BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit BetterHelp.com/OCT. That's Better H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
And don't forget about our special offer that's for all If These Ovaries Could Talk listeners. You're going to get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/OCT.
Do it. I want to take it back to your childhood. And all the fostering you saw in your childhood, because I feel like that's a rare thing. I can't tell. I can count on one hand with one finger the amount of foster children I knew. Well, actually, I think I knew a couple, but I didn't know the families who were fostering them, you know? So I want to know all about that. What state did you grow up in? Was it Washington?
Yeah. So I've always been Washingtonian. I was born in Seattle and then moved to a very rural town called Shelton. In that town, it's definitely more of a logging community, farming community. So it was a very rural setting. So when I was growing up, when my parents got into foster care, they got into it to do what's called respite. And that's where a foster kiddo would go from their foster home to another home for like a weekend or a week. And that was kind of how we slowly got into it. So my cousins that were not really my cousins, just foster kids, but at, you know, 8 years old, that's a cousin, somebody to go play with.
Yeah.
That's how we kind of slowly got into it. And I loved it because biologically I'm an only child. So there is nothing like having a partner in crime. There's nothing like having somebody else to tell your secrets to and go sneak out at night and go build the tree fort. And I mean, those are some of the best memories I had were, you know, being able to have, you know, 5, 6, 7 of us cousins all get together during the summer months when we had to go out to the farm and help, you know, buck hay and get the farm ready for the winter, and being able to go out and do the tree fort. Pick on the cows was one of our funnest things. Like, okay, who can get the closest to the cow? Who can touch the cow without it running away?
Wait, we had cow tipping, but it's really not a thing. But no, everyone thought it was a thing. Everyone thought it was, if you live in a small town, everyone goes, oh, you're going to go cow tipping. It's like, there is no, you don't tip cows.
Oh, I thought you really did.
No, you really don't. I thought
that's what you guys
City
did.
People think that about farmers. No, we would go hang out at the at the quarry or at the gravel pit, and you'd drink and you'd have parties in the woods.
Anyway, so you had a very great experience as a foster sibling, basically, or a foster cousin, because you had aunts and uncles who were doing it too. And do you think that well, obviously, I think that that helped you decide that I think I want to do this one.
Yeah,
day.
I mean, the flip side of that was, did you ever consider if you wanted your own biological kids, or was it because that experience was so rich, you were like, no, I want to do that?
Wow, that's a question. Do I want my own bio kids? Right now, my husband and I don't. We worked with a younger kiddo, and that kiddo had a lot of energy and a lot of behavioral challenges. Okay. And my husband has given me the rule that I can bring anything home as long as it's double digits. So 10 and up is what I'm allowed to bring home.
You have said the term kiddos many times. And It's interesting you say this. This is, you're the second person.
Another foster person.
I heard use the term kiddos. Now I'm wondering if this is like a foster parent term, because it was another foster couple that we interviewed. Yeah. And she said kiddos all the time as well. It's a, I love the term kiddos, but is that, or did you just, are you just like simpatico and you didn't know it?
No, I actually trained to use that term. So when I train new foster parents through their 24-hour kind of crash course to become foster parents, I specifically talk about referring to them as kiddos, because son or daughter is a binary term. We work with a lot of kids that are gender fluid, transgendered, and kiddo doesn't have that connotation. And it also doesn't describe your relationship to the kiddo. So it's not saying, oh, I'm their foster parent, I'm their mom, their dad. We're just kind of eliminating all of that and saying kiddos. So one of the librarians that I work with runs the youth rooms. Well, when it wasn't the end of the world with COVID, and she is amazing. And she kind of coined the term. She asks all the kiddos, okay, where's your big person? So it's not, where's your parent? Instant shame to these kiddos. It's, where's your big person?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Even as a teaching artist, I'm a teaching artist in schools, and we steer clear of parent as well. Yeah. We say big person, we say grown up, but I'm not even sure if that's.
Cause Jamie and I are always proving we're not,
it's not always a grown up.
Yep. We're not.
Sometimes it's an older sibling. It's not always a grown up. So that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
The kiddos.
I do think that, and as we've had foster conversations, just it seems that the language needs to be really particular. Like that whole thing of, instead of calling them fostering, calling, what's the phrase? It's not foster. It's
resource parent.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, it seems like it's intentional on top of intentional when you're being that kind of a parent, because you need to know the boundaries. Or is there a better way to say that?
Inclusive, right? It's inclusive of all.
Very true. And one of the things that we're really pushing for here in Washington State is, you know, getting foster parents and bio parents to collaborate and support one another. So we know in Washington State that 90% of youth return home. So how can we enable that? How, when it's appropriate, can we get foster parents and the bio parents together to be team parenting? Where it's appropriate to have both of them go, hey, you know, yes, I have your, you know, your kiddo staying with me. What's their normal bedtime routine? What's their favorite food? What doctors are they seeing so I can request records? Start building that relationship. And then, okay, you have visits. We know the kiddo is going to be going back. Why can't we invite that bio parent? Hey, your kid's in this play, your kid's at this sporting event. Why don't you join us? You know, start having that integration where we really break down these walls where everybody's like, oh, bio parents are terrible. Bio parents think foster parents are here to only steal kids. And just let's come together, because at the end of the day, the kiddo's in the middle. How beautiful would it be is that that foster kiddo then returns home. Now that foster parent gets to be that cool aunt and uncles or friends and still gets, you know, Christmas cards or gets to come to the school events where the roles were reversed, where you know, the bio parent invites you to the school event or the doctor's appointment or whatever it is.
I see, like making it this relationship that binds you guys as opposed to enemies. Exactly. From the start.
Yeah. You seem to have a really particular setting, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so tell me if I'm saying this wrong, where you know that you're there for these kiddos and they're going to come and you're either going to have them for long-term placement or you're going to help them get back, but you aren't of the mindset of, you're like, I'm trying to build this tiny unit that is me, my husband, and a foster child that we want to adopt. Like, it seems like you're coming at it from helping these kids in the system or and through your house for however long they're with you. Is that right? Or is that accurate?
It's pretty accurate, because the kids that I work with are going to be the older kiddos. So we know it's much harder for them to find placements, much harder for them to have adoptions. Most of my kiddos are higher behavioral needs, so they're not going to return home. So I kind of know that it's a long-term placement. But with the agency, we really focus on that holistic wraparound approach of having, you know, kind of that extended family. So when you do respite, we try to make sure you go to the same respite providers to be cool aunt and uncles. And really, over the years, I've learned that the more pillars you can get the kiddo to snatch onto in the community, the better. So pillars are going to be friends, school, animals, sports, teachers, whatever those are. The more pillars they have that they can hold on to and build from, the more stable they become. So looking at everything I do from kind of that wraparound holistic approach of like, how is my family? I always had aunts and uncles and extended family to go hang out with. Why can't they have that in their own safe way? Why can't these kiddos go do sports? Why can't they be involved in animal husbandry? Why can't they take care of my parrot? Why can't they take care of the dog?
Yeah.
Okay, Robin, it is time to talk about California Cryobank.
Yes.
The number one recommended sperm bank by physicians, who also has a diverse selection of over 400 highly screened donors representing over 90 different ancestries, which is really important. We're not all cookie cutter, right, Robin? We need donors of all shapes and sizes and colors. Mm. We're a rainbow, if you will.
I see what you did there, Jamie. It's one of my favorite places because California Cryo is where we got the sperm to make our babies.
Yeah, all of our babies. It's true.
Yeah.
And if you're in an LGBTQ relationship, chances are you're going to need something extra to make your family, like sperm.
Mm-hmm. And California Cryo's got plenty of it.
They sure do.
And bonus, they help our community. Did you know that California Cryo partners with LGBTQ plus organizations to sponsor family building events nationwide?
That's so good.
I know. And they created a special discounted fertility preservation program for the transgender community, which provides, you know, basically the opportunity to have biological kids after transitioning.
So good.
And I did not know that when I used them. That makes me feel even better that we did.
It's so good. It's so great. I'm so happy we use them. And they're available on the phone if you have questions. I called when I was torn between two donors, and the lady on the other end was really, really helpful. She was kind and patient. It was nice. And I'm happy I use them, and I'm happy I have my family now. No regrets.
Agreed. And the good part is that California Cryobank is going to offer a free level 2 donor information subscription access for 90 days to our listeners.
That's worth $145, guys. That's
amazing.
Huge. And it gives you access to extended donor profiles, childhood photos, and adult photos for some of the donors. It gives you access to their medical histories. You can read personal essays they've written. So much stuff.
And if any of you out there are looking for donor sperm, just go to cryobank.com, open a free account, and use code OCT to activate your free subscription today.
That's cryobank.com, CRYOBANK.com. Go there. Get that sperm. What exactly does it mean? You've explained it a little bit, but the respite parent, you say that your aunts and uncles were respite parents, meaning kids who are already placed in a foster home would come to your house for a weekend. What is that?
So it's kind of flipped around. So my everybody in Washington State, you'd be a foster parent. My aunt was a foster parent that had the kids full time. She would then, because we had a great relationship with a couple of those foster kiddos, she would have what's called respite, which is short-term placement at another home, usually like 2 days or a week. And that was how my family, my parents decided, because they got to, you know, kind of get that little taste of being a foster parent for a couple of weekends. Then when my aunt had to go out of town, they would keep the kiddos for a week or two. And then my parents were like, hey, this isn't that bad. Let's go ahead and do it full time ourselves. And then that's where my parents started getting full time kids.
Oh, also, I just had a realization, because if you don't have the paperwork in place, these kiddos cannot go on a sleepover anywhere, right? They have to stay with the family they're placed with. Am I wrong with that?
That's changed. So in the state of Washington, within the last couple of years, we've had the prudent parenting laws. So the state of Washington really works with the alumni of foster care to understand what's working, what's not, how we can better things. So one of the things that they did is prudent parenting came up from foster kids saying that exact thing. I want to spend the night at my friend's house, but you're saying they have to do a background check before I can spend the night. How is that normal childhood?
Yeah.
So we now have prudent parenting laws here in Washington State, which allow me as a foster parent to make certain decisions. So some of that is with the kiddos can spend the night at a friend's house for up to 72 hours at my discretion. So if I know the family, I know the address, the kids are on the same team together, school, and I would do it for my bio kid, why I can do it for my foster kiddo. I can take my kiddo on camping within the state for 72 hours without approvals. I can approve school functions. I can approve all of those without having to go through that rigorous process of either a background evaluation or, hey, I need a court order. And we all know anything to do with the government takes time.
Right.
Yeah.
But that's state by state.
Correct. That's going to be a state by state.
Board.
Yep.
Yeah. Hmm. Can we go back to you a little bit? Because I'm curious about I keep thinking about that first boy and like some of the others, like in the language, do they call you dad or is it by your name? And like, how do you place them in your life? Do you think of them as sons and daughters or is that dangerous thinking or how do you define, I guess, with language, your family?
So yes, it is in my mind. I they get my heart and soul. So I, you know, it's very hard when they leave because they take a part of that heart and soul with them.
Yeah.
Very emotional. And it's a lot of vicarious trauma that, you know, foster parents go through. And kind of the saying I tell every foster parent that's interested and goes, like, God, my heart would just break when they go back. I'm like, it's better for my heart to break as an adult than for a little to never know love.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Cry.
So I look at all of my kiddos as my family. They're my kiddos. That's why I call them all my kiddos. Even my kids that are now, you know, approaching 30. They're still my kiddos. I have an open door policy. They still come home and raid my fridge.
You know? Do laundry.
Yeah. It's like having, you know, any 20-year-old. They're going to come home, do laundry, sleep on your couch, eat you out of house and home. They're going to go, hey, can I borrow this? Can I borrow that? You know, we've moved many of our kiddos into their own homes, into roommate situations. We've had several of my kids actually go to college. I've had a couple that got some technical certifications over the years. So it's a really kind of what every other parent that has a teenager goes through.
But you fast forwarded it. Basically, you just fast forwarded that process.
You missed diapers. You missed diapers, which is great.
I mean,
it's not bad. How many kids have come through your house? Do you know?
You know, I have lost count, honestly, of how many kiddos have come through my home. Probably in the triple digits by now.
Wow.
So.
Wow. But.
It's amazing.
So all of the kiddos who have come through your home for, I don't know what the reasons are, but for whatever reason, some of them don't stay as long. Mm-hmm. Some of them you build closer relationships with. What has your foster parent or resource parent experience been like in regards, like it's really hard to let them, to have them leave the nest, mm-hmm. of course, but also having all these children come through your home, your kiddos come through your home. Some of them you establish a close relationship, some of them not.
I'm one of those in for a penny, in for a pound. So I get attached.
You get a big heart.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
I get super attached, gets me super hurt at times. So when I started, I got licensed as a foster parent with the state directly. And most mm-hmm. of my experiences were short term with the state. I moved into working with a private agency because my kids' behaviors had escalated, where they needed more supports, more wraparound services. So I've always known since I've been with the agency that most of mine are either a couple of months or they're incredibly long-term. So my short-term ones are going to be really for stabilization, like step-down services. So going from a group care center to my home and then to a, you know, traditional foster home.
Okay.
Or kids going from the traditional foster home, trying to help stabilize at my house and then go back.
Interesting. So let's talk about the behaviors. Let's talk about the behaviors you see and these kiddos go through on a day-to-day basis just to live in the world.
Yeah. So it's kind of normal teenagehood. We have all of those anxieties. First day of school. I don't want to do online school. I don't want to get up at 6:30 in the morning. So we have all of those fun ones.
Who does?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we kind of go through all of those, but the extra layers that, you know, we kind of work with, and I kind of describe it almost kind of like peeling back an onion, is that, you know, there's so many layers to the behaviors. Everything the kids do makes sense to them from their perspectives and their life experiences. So we have what's called PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, is what a lot of the kiddos have. And that's from, you know, previous placements. That's from losses of schools, friends, animals, loss of home, siblings, all of those. And then we also are working on my kiddos that have what's called reactive attachment disorder. So RAD is where the kiddos, when they start feeling safe, comfortable, they then get afraid of, oh, this foster parent, I've been told 10 times this is my forever home, or they're never going to give up on me. And eventually there comes a point where they do. So the kiddo in their mind goes, I'm going to take control of that because the unknown is so scary. I'm going to push away. I'm going to cuss you out. I'm going to slam my door. I'm going to do whatever I can to get you to kick me out because you're eventually going to do it anyway. And I want it done on my terms.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of reassuring. It's a lot of looking for those kind of, you know, chinks in the armor of where can you drop that little nugget of wisdom, that little nugget of, hey, you're always part of the family. And, you know, the kids really believing that takes a long time. The kids have what we kind of coined is the honeymoon phase. That's where a kiddo comes for the first month, first week, first 3 months, and they're just amazing. And you're like, gosh, this is the most amazing kid ever. Why did this kiddo get moved five times? And then it clicks in their brain that, oh my gosh, this is a safe, loving home. All my needs are being met. And then their brain goes, okay, now you need to start remembering and reconnecting with those traumas.
Yep.
So then your kiddo that you have had this great relationship and you drop your cup of coffee on the table and it makes a loud bang and they get freaked out and they get triggered. And then it takes a day or two to calm them back down and reassure them that they're in a safe, loving environment.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it takes a supreme amount of patience to get there. For me, I mean, I don't know. I'm just thinking about even just my six-year-old and the things that she does to piss me off. I am not that good at being patient during those things. And I would say that I don't create the most loving environment in those moments for my child who's freaking out on me. So how do you, and maybe this isn't an issue for you, but how do you get through those moments? How do you get through those times to make sure that you can reassure this kiddo, I'm here, I'm not going anywhere?
Quite honestly, with my older kids, I tell them that I'm not a perfect parent. I'm going to make mistakes, and I want you to tell me when I've made a mistake. Because I want my kiddos to articulate back to me of when they make a mistake and we can apologize. And there's a really weird power dynamic that goes into effect when, like, parents go, I don't want to tell my kid I made a mistake and I'm sorry. That doesn't take away any of my power as a parent.
Nope.
I am modeling the behaviors I want. I am showing them that I am not perfect and I make mistakes and that we can all grow and learn together. So there's lots of times that I could have handled something differently. I could have said something differently that I tell the kids, I'm sorry, you know, let's take a step back. I need my own time out. Hey, can we talk about this at dinner time? Can we talk about this? Give me 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Because really a timeout, usually it's us that are escalated, not our kiddo. in all honesty. So
Yeah.
Shame and I are like, yep, cosign.
Completely. You're so right. Wait, that is a new idea to me. And you are so right.
Yeah.
It's when I'm fed up.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
You know, we did a couple of foster care episodes a couple seasons ago, and they were very LGBTQ friendly. And we were all, you could be a gay and you can foster. And then we got feedback from people who were like, not necessarily. We've faced discrimination. And I'm curious, because you have the two perspectives of working in the industry as well as, you know, being, you know, two dads. So, like, how is the LGBTQ factor for you and your experience?
So again, that's going to, you know, vary by state. So here in Washington State, you know, we're incredibly progressive. We're incredibly supportive of the LGBTQ community. The agency that I'm licensed with as a foster parent and that I recruit for, we are known as that LGBTQ hub. We have trans families. We work with a lot of trans youth. We have a lot of same-sex couples. And honestly, that's where I do a lot of my recruiting, is just in my own personal LGBTQ support groups, because we know it's challenging being part of the LGBTQ community. Now you throw in that you're a parent, and I was a single parent for many years, and I needed a support group. And that is actually where I have a lot of my foster parents from. So it's been a really good kind of meshing of my own personal support groups and my professional groups now. So in Washington State, we recently passed rules. So if I come out and you tell me, hey, I want to be a foster parent, I'm going to be the most amazing, everything's perfect. And then we get to the section about supporting LGBTQ youth. And you say, I'll take any kid, but don't give me an LGBTQ youth. I'm going to talk with you. I'm going to see, is this a lack of education? What is it? And if you tell me, nope, I totally get it. I just don't want to deal with them. State of Washington says you cannot be a foster parent.
Oh,
wow.
That is how strict the state of Washington is for our foster youth.
That's amazing.
Go Washington.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great on Washington, but it's sad that that's not
everywhere.
The board.
No, and it's very challenging when at the other end of the spectrum, Texas just released within the last couple of weeks that they can now legally tell same-sex couples, you cannot be a foster parent.
Yep. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking when we go backwards like that.
Well, we know of at least one agency who is not going to do that just because based on Crystal and Kelly, an episode we did, who have fostered, they got a house full of kids and they're in Texas. And I don't think anybody's going to turn the corner on them with that because they're amazing.
But it is heartbreaking because it's almost like as an LGBTQ parent, you just have to really do your research and make sure you find an agency that aligns with those values if you're not in a state like Washington.
Well, and even within the state, there's agencies that are more, there's a difference between truly being part of that community and I'm accepting of that. So, there's that, very big differences. There's also, kind of the growth that I'm excited to see the state take is that they've even updated their form. So one of the forms I found out when we were doing backgrounds for one of my trans couples, it just said gender. Washington State got rid of the male-female boxes, but it doesn't say, it just says gender. And they said, well, heck, is this my biological gender or is this my gender identity now? I went to the state and I said, hey, listen, I've got a fantastic family. This is very confusing. What is it? So within 90 days, licensing division updated that frequently asked questions on the form to say gender identity. Washington State is only interested in gender identity of the families and of our kiddos. So if we have a kiddo that in October says, I feel that I am more of a female, and then the case manager comes back in January, they say I'm more male. State of Washington requires that social worker to update the gender marker.
Amazing.
Wow. That's, go Washington.
No, we all
That's
need to move to Washington. Move to. Exactly.
No, we all have to move to the other states so we can get them on Washington's level is really what has to happen. Yeah. But that's a hard job. Hey, Robin.
Yeah, Jamie.
Did you know that a simple finger prick can unlock tons of insight into your reproductive health? Did you know that?
I did.
I'm talking egg count, menopause timing. Ooh. If your hormone levels indicate conditions like thyroid disorders or PCOS, all things that are good to know whether or not you want kids in the future.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why Modern Fertility was created. I mean, I love them so much because it's the easy and affordable way to test your fertility hormones at home. You just have to prick your finger. So simple. And then you mail it in with a prepaid label and you'll get your personalized results within 10 days.
Listen, this is really actually so great for our community. Mm-hmm. And you brought this up the other day, Robin. Like, what if you're in a same-sex couple and you can't decide who should carry? All you have to do is get yourself a Modern Fertility kit and let science decide. It's brilliant.
That is brilliant. Yeah. And here's why it's extra brilliant, Jamie. Mm-hmm. Because traditional testing with your doctor can cost over $1,000. But Modern Fertility costs only $159 to get that exact same information. And if you want to go to modernfertility.com/OCT, mm-hmm. you're going to get $20 off that test. And finally, Jamie, in terms of brilliance, if you have HSA or FSA with your health insurance, you can use these dollars for Modern Fertility. Amazing.
Yeah.
So basically, if you want kids today or you might want one in the future, you need information to make the decision that's best for you.
And right now, guys, Modern Fertility is offering our listeners $20 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/OCT. That means your test is going to cost $139 instead of the hundreds or thousands it could cost at a doctor's office.
You're going to get $20 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/OCT.
modernfertility.com/OCT. Have you fostered many LGBTQ youth?
Oh, yeah. Fostered numerous LGBTQ youth. We know that statistically here in Washington State, there's about double the amount of LGBTQ youth within the foster care system than not in foster care.
Why is that?
Unfortunately, even in such a progressive state, we still have parents that are going to reject their kids. We still have kids that don't feel safe in their homes. We still have, where there's that bias around being part of the community. And it's, it just breaks my heart. And especially for our very much trans youth or our kids that are really questioning their gender identity, that adds another layer to their traumas because their families didn't accept LGBTQ to begin with. And then especially if a male says, hey, I feel that this is not my correct gender identity. And then you get that whole bias and it's just a cascading effect. So the agency knows that I primarily work with LGBTQ teens. So over the years, I've had basically my husband and I were licensed for both genders in the state of Washington so we can work with our questioning youth, our trans youth, You know, we've had the privilege of working with many young men that are coming out for the first time. My 2 years ago for Pride, one of my kiddos truly wanted to dress up in a dress and had been experimenting at the house, but never felt comfortable enough to, you know, actually go out in the community. And one of my recruiting events was at the first ever junior drag show in Tacoma. So he said, I will go and drag if me and my husband go and drag. And I'm like,
Oh, you and your husband and your giant beard.
So I didn't have the giant beard, but it's definitely a unique position for somebody of my stature to have a strapless dress. Don't do strapless to go out. And I was at the drag show and it was just an amazing experience for my kid because my husband and I don't do drag. We didn't know how to do a wig, the makeup and all of that. And all of these other drag moms just totally took them under their wing and helped them with a wig, showed them how to do the makeup. I'm, you know, falling around in high heels and, you know, holding on to a table, trying to look like as businesslike as I can be. And, you know, I'm like, I'm not leaving the comfort of the table. I can hold on to it. I know I'm not going to fall. And, you know, it was just great because my kiddo got to meet all of these families and see how accepting it is. We took them to their first ever Pride. They were 16 years old and had never done a Pride show and got to do the parade and wanted to meet all the drag queens. And, you know, he's my size and he would come up and whisper in my ear, go, can I go get a picture with that drag queen? I'm like, go get a picture with all of them.
Yeah.
And that's,
can you imagine how supported they must have felt? Like, it's one thing to like come out to your parent as you're questioning, you're trying to figure out what your identity is, your gender identity. Another thing for your parent to then dress up alongside you to support you so you didn't feel alone. Like, that is so above and beyond and so wonderful.
Yeah.
It's the least that we can do for them. I mean, these kiddos need to be shown that they're loving, caring adults because we know they don't hear that message enough in our society. Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I grew up in the 90s, the definition of a gay person was either this over-the-top femme that is always promiscuous or this, you know, lonely, left alone person that just drinks coffee and hates the world. I mean, those are my two. Yes. That was all I knew growing up. And to be able to show these kiddos that you can be professionally successful, you can be happy, you can be married, you can have amazing partners and travel and see everything.
You can foster. Mm-hmm. You can be a parent and you can be a good one.
And also the door is always open. You also show them that they can come and then they can come home again. You're not just like, yeah, I have you for however long. You're literally saying to them, this is your home. You can come back whenever. That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, like, that is foster care at its best. That's just beautiful.
It's parenting at its best.
Beautiful.
It's parenting.
Yes. Yes. I mean, both Robin and I'm looking at you, Robin, too.
I know.
We've been in tears a little bit through this conversation.
You shut up, Jimmy. Shut up.
You're doing really good things.
You are one of the people who reached out to us, and Jamie and I we feel so like fortunate and lucky, and by extension, everybody who gets to hear the podcast when people like you reach out to us because we get to share your story, and then how many people you're going to then open up the door of fostering to, and how many more kids. Well, because you shared your story. So I'm so glad you reached out.
Yeah.
It's a privilege to be a foster parent and to really call these kiddos my own and to see them grow. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're lucky to get 80 years on this planet. If these kiddos can explore and discover who they are now, think of the 60 years plus of being an adult. They can benefit themselves, grow their communities versus spending 20 or 30 years trying to figure out who they are.
Yeah. Mm.
One of the things that we really look at with my kiddos is we, again, go back to that holistic approach. I want to really look at where are they emotionally, where are they with school, where are they on track? And the track thing is really looking at most of my kiddos having a traditional college setting is not the right track for them. So they want to work with their hands. I want to encourage them. So we're going to look at doing a combination of getting their high school diploma and doing a trade school. So I'm very fortunate is that I have a lot of community colleges and resources in my area. So we're able to partner. So the kiddos spend half a day going to high school. And then the other half is auto shop repair, painting, construction. And we're very fortunate is that we have several trade unions that are around us. So we're able to get the kids down at the shipyard and they can start slowly working into the trades that are down there. They can also work into the unions. And it's been very beneficial for several of my kiddos because within the union is a very good hierarchy of you start out down here, put your licks in for a year, you move here, here, and here. So that's been very
beneficial.
Benefits
and pensions and all that business. Yeah.
Exactly. So looking at all those, looking at, are they receiving the right kind of counseling? So everybody goes, oh, counseling is sitting down in a comfy chair and just sitting here like this talking. There are so many different types. So you can have play therapy. You can have animal therapy. You can have one of the biggest successes that we've had are our grief walks. So our kids think they're just going on a hike with our case management team, and they are actually having a focused conversation on grief. In our society, we think about grief as, oh, it's the loss of a parent or a friend. But it doesn't have to be a death. It can be the loss in the move. Think of it, if you went to work right now, Robin, and somebody comes to your office and says, hey, Robin, you need to come with us. Everything you know is not safe, and you're going to come here. We take you to an office. You don't get your stuff. You don't get your bags. You then get told, hey, Robin, wait in this room for a while we figure this out. Hours pass. We give you a cruddy little sack lunch. Hours pass again. Then you get to go to some stranger's home, and we're like, well, here's where you're going to be for the first 30 days, and we'll figure something else out. Think of how much grief you're going to have over the loss of your school, your friends, your pets. Even simple things like smell, your clothes, your pajamas, your pillow. We all know, why is it when we go on vacation, I could take both of you to a five-star resort.
I'll take my own pillow.
And you're going to notice it's different. Yeah. That's what I mean, Jamie.
Yeah.
Is that it's those simple little things of my pillow.
How many times do you say, I want to get back to my bed?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But you're in a five-star resort and you have the most comfy bed you could have. But it's not my bed. It's not my smells. It's not my lights the way I want them. It's not my room.
Yeah.
And you're not an adult.
And you have no control.
How do you process that?
Exactly.
Oh.
And it's very challenging. And one of the exercises I do with the new foster parents is think about your bathroom and your towels. Does everybody have the same communal towels that they all grab out of the closet? Or does everybody have their own towels? Are the towels that are hanging up in your bathroom decoration towels that nobody uses? After you use the towel, are you telling them to hang the towel back up so they can use it again? Or is it put it in the laundry hamper? Does that wet towel stay in the bathroom, or does it get hung up in the kids' bedroom or your bedroom? I mean, just something as simple as a bath towel. We have so many different ways of using it.
Yeah. It's so true. And
everybody's particular.
Every house's routine is totally different. Mm-hmm. You're so right. That is a really great way to put it.
It really is.
That's a really great way to put it.
I'm just thankful that there's people like you who are out there for the kids to help them walk through that kind of grief and that kind of transition and change. And that's so much to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Thank you really so much for sharing your story. We are so lucky to have you. And as are all of your kiddos.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, Nathan.
What a lovely dad. I would have loved to have had Nathan as a dad.
He's such a great guy.
I know.
Such a good head on his shoulders, that Nathan.
I know.
I, at 21, forget God. About it. I wasn't going to be able to
37?
Take care of anyone.
God, I was like just ready, getting ready to have kids, and he's got grandkids.
Ugh. 43? Still can't do it. Still can't do it. Anyway, he's a diamond. I was going to say a diamond in the rough, but he's not a diamond in the rough. He's a gem. That's what he is.
Okay, Jamie. You do some more prayer hands? I love that he knows that he's best with older kids and that that's where he focuses. Like, I just think that's so cool, you know, and like what work he can do for those. That's a population of kids that a lot of people
don't. Those are the ones that need
the most help.
The most.
Yeah. It's
oh my
so
God.
Amazing.
And they're facing bigger decisions in life and they're facing bigger things in life and they need guidance. And so good job.
Good job,
Nathan. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you for doing the work you're doing.
Folks.
For just being you.
Go out and get our New York Times blockbuster bestseller, If These Ovaries Could Talk, The Things We've Learned About Making an LGBTQ Family.
If you build it, they will come.
At all major retailers. And if you want to buy locally,
please.
And this is a serious, check IndieBound, because that's a great resource for buying local.
Go get our book and tell all of your local bookstores to carry our
book.
Yes. Because they probably don't yet.
No, probably not. Get the audiobook if you want us to read you to bed at night. I mean, how nice would that be? We're here to tell you some LGBTQ family stories before
Except
you drift off to sleep.
If you get it, don't be afraid to rate and review on Amazon or Goodreads.
All right, let's get off the Goodreads and let's talk about social media, Jamie.
Let's talk about social media and let's talk about the fact that I'm glad we're not on social media right now because I'm literally wearing my pajama top.
Oh my
God. Which happens to be my Ovaries Talk shirt.
And I'm glad because I think my mascara is like running down my face.
You put
like,
mascara on this
No,
morning?
I did it last night and I couldn't be bothered to even wash my face. I was just like,
oh, wow. That's extra.
I passed
That's
out.
That's extra.
I'm so tired.
All right, check us out on Ovaries Talk on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all our Ovaries Talk. If These Ovaries Could Talk on YouTube, where you can see recordings of our live streams. Don't forget, we do live streams on Facebook and YouTube at 4 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday. So check us out. And there's a bunch of videos on our YouTube channel you can see. They're
shows.
So fun.
Yep.
You can also support the podcast and join our community on Patreon at patreon.com/ovariestalk. And don't forget, over there, you're going to get bonus content. The episode drops a day early. You get
so
bonus
much
videos.
Good stuff.
Unedited video interviews.
Yes.
Which is always fun because you get to hear all of Robin's weird accents that she does.
I do accents sometimes. It's my Sean Connery. Thank you to our sponsors, BetterHelp Generate Life Sciences and Modern Fertility. And a big thank you to our, I'm going to turn into Katherine Hepburn, to our Patreons who are helping us make this show. Oh my God, stop it, Robin. We thank you.
Stop it, Robin. Thank you so much, guys.
We have to end this before I keep going.
Tune in next week. Check us out on the socials. We're around.
I just want you to know that the entire time I was doing that accent, Helen was standing next to me going, that was her cigarette. That was her cigarette in my face. By the way, we got an email about Helen. From someone who said they saw Helen at the gym. And I was like, you better take a picture of that person because it can't be Helen. She doesn't go to the gym. All right. Eggs.
Ovaries.
Out.
Out. We got to get out of here before people hate us.
If these ovaries could talk, they would say, eggs, ovaries, out.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.